Weinberger has no talk show these days. Harry Carey can't have a talk show anymore. But when David Simpson talks, people listen. And so will you to The True Money Show, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network channels Crusade. Everything is true, but what it don't get, I can't use, I need
more.
You do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you, them guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a blister on your little finger. Maybe get a blister on your thumb. We got to install.
All right, everybody, let's get on to the True Money Show. I need a new opening. Hello, everybody. I'm David Simpson. You're listening to the True Money Show on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing. And so long as we're standing, the other side has troubles on their hands. That's what I have to say. I was a little late getting on today. Mike and I were chit-chatting. I think, you know, Mike's taking a few hits on the jaw lately, and like I said, he's still standing. I took a few about, I don't know, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mike and I always ascribe this to the evil forces because, I mean, it just comes on us, man. Just like starts raining down on us, all hell breaking loose, and it's very frustrating. And all you can do is double down on your prayers and really focus on doing good and not worrying about all the troubles that are befalling you. Anyway, Mike's taken a couple recently, but I still notice, and I have it myself, like a renewed spirit, there's a joy and a focus and a happiness and a sense of accomplishment just waiting to be had. That's a good thing. You know what? And you know what's causing it? It's all you Crusaders out there listening to the Crusade Channel and getting involved, starting to add to the force every day in every way. In small ways, big ways, medium ways, it doesn't matter. Always help. So let's talk about the show a little bit. The True Money Show, 844-527-8723, 844-5-CRUSADE. You can reach me at that number. You can email me. TrueMoneyShow@CrusadeChannel.com or David@TFFCO.com. Either way, the chat room is open. And if you, wow, look at that. Molly P. jumping in early with the Crusadery funds for whoop whoop. I don't know what that means. Whoop whoop. Hey, Molly, if you want to if you don't find it, you know, like, I don't know, compromising to your family or whatever. Slap a picture of that little dude in the chat room. I like that little smiley picture you sent me. That baby looks happy. That kid looks like he's happy. So I'm talking to Molly Pitcher in the chat room. If you'd like to join the chat room, you can. CrusadeChannel.com/Crusader-Stadium. If you're not a member, you cannot participate. So that's why it's so very nice to join the Crusade. We have I think there's another one. I didn't see that one. Oh, Yakub is laughing in the chat room. He looks like a happy baby. There you go, Cesare. How you like that? How you like that, Cez?
Depoy is liking the baby.
Hey, Mike, look at the chat room. You see that? You see the kid? Man, that kid's happy. All right, so that's, you see what happens when he hears the True Money Show coming on. All of a sudden, he goes, hey, I'm excited. Dave's coming on. Okay, what was I saying? I don't even know where I was. Oh, the chat room. You want to join? You got to be a member. And I think we still have free memberships out there. Just go to crusadechannel.com. Look at the join button, and I'm sure there'll be some options to join for free, to join for a price. But I really want you to join for a price, meaning a monthly subscription, because, as Mike was just saying, we have created a media outlet. Well, not we. When I say we, I mean Mike. But whatever. Mike has created a media outlet, and what's so significant about it is, and I said it's more than that, Mike. Mike's got the media outlet going. I'm forming the economic reform, this thing that's going to start creating a parallel economy. We have Brother and all of the other guest hosts and so on, Barrett and everybody else, who's doing educational items via the Crusade. And, gosh, who knows, by the time we're finished, we might actually have our own army. And I mean that in the literal sense, no terrorism implied. Anyway... let me just say something. The communist takeover of the universe has never had, never, and I'm not saying this, you know, tongue in cheek, has never had quite the organized resistance that is being formulated via the Crusade Channel. That's why I'm excited, and I think that's why Mike is excited, notwithstanding the slaps he's getting from the underworld. And so, all that being said, if you join and you are a subscriber, you are helping us further form this coalition. And it is big and growing and exciting. I've really, and I'm not saying this, again, not tongue-in-cheek, I haven't been this excited about anything in quite some time. Because I really do feel like, and maybe feelings aren't the best judge of things, but I really do feel like there is something afoot. We are making progress, and it's only going to grow. What's on the show? What is on the True Money Show? I'm glad you tuned in to the True Money Show. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for joining me in the chat room. Thanks for emailing me. I got an email already, email answer to my financial question of the day. Let's get to that. What is on the show? Well, I just said good things are happening. I have a big announcement later in the show. It goes in along with my big announcement from last week's show, where I talked about the Crusader Investment Club. So I'm going to give you an update on the Crusader Investment Club. I'm going to give you another big announcement. We have some good stuff happening. I'm going to add to my some. I'm going to add some thoughts that I made to my speech. Mike sent me the video of my talk, and I thought I gave a better presentation than I did. As I watched it again, it's like, David, you didn't finish that thought. Oh, hey, man, you kind of didn't logically sequence that very well. I did get interrupted a few times, you know, with the car honking and all that stuff. So I was, you know, it was kind of lighthearted. But I do want to go back and review some of those ideas. But I got an article today from Franklin Sanders, Reviving Local Economies. But it just made me think, look, we got Franklin Sanders, really, truly a money genius, right? Like a guy who understands money, metals, finance, economy, as good, if not better, than everyone else. And so there are some great minds assembling in this little crusade, and God bless them and God bless us because of it. In this day in money history, I'm going to talk about there ought to be a law. There ought to be a law. How many times have you heard that? I'm going to take a little different spin on it. By the way, announcement to everyone listening to the True Money Show. You may not be aware of this, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We, that's Crusaders, are not evil for being private. I don't know why privacy and secrecy and just having your own life has taken it so, has gotten such a bad rap these days, but we're not evil for being private. I'm going to discuss that in one of my segments of the show as well. Like I said, I've got the big Crusader Investment Club update. And, of course, as always, I do a financial weather report, and I ask my financial question of the day. And so let me lay that on you right now, and then we'll do the financial weather report. The financial question of the day is this. Do you know, do you, dear listener, do you know the real reason that money and that the money industry is so severely regulated? What would be your guess there? Well, that always opens up our little financial weather report. Let me go over there and get those numbers for you. We've been a little red ink for the last couple of days. It's kind of like around here. By the way, it's been raining in Louisiana for, I don't know, ever. And so we had 14 hours of sunshine in the last week. And it's starting to rain again. I drove up and I felt some raindrops coming down. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This just can't go on, but on and on and on. So as much rain as we've had, it hadn't quite had quite as much red ink in the market, but we had one today. So the Dow Jones, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down $164.62 or 0.48%. So half a point down the Dow. The price is still atmospheric. What would you say? Is that a good word for it? $33,896.04. S&P 500 lost about half that, 0.29%. Down $12.15. The price on the S&P is 4,115.68. Let's look at where. Of course. I go to get my numbers for the market, and I'm signed in on the wrong account. And I was wondering why those S&P and Dow are inverted. The Russell 2500 is down $6.37, or 0.71%. So the small and mid caps are down almost 0.75%. The foreign developed markets, the EFA index, Echo Foxtrot Alpha, down 70 cents, or 0.88%. That's price is $78.88 on EFA. And then the emerging markets is an ETF called Echo Mike, down 16 cents or 0.3%, price point $53.45. Finally, the bonds down 16 cents or 0.14%, price in the ag is $113.90. So the bonds continue their decline, their long, steady decline in value. Let me ask you this. This is my kind of a mixture of my, I won't call it this day in money history, we'll call it this decade in money history. Can you tell me which decade in history fits this description? You ready? What decade had a flu pandemic? You might want to write these down so you can organize all your thoughts to make your best guess. What decade had a flu pandemic? A roaring stock market, and a national feeling of unparalleled greatness. Your time starts now, Roger. Good luck. No one chiming in the chat room. Nobody wants to guess which decade had a flu pandemic, and I'm kind of cheating there a little bit, by the way. A roaring stock market and a national feeling of unparalleled greatness. Kaiser for the win, but I'm going to trick you. Is it the 2020s? Is it the 2020s? No. The Pool and the Schaefer and the Kaiser come in with a win. The 1920s. I gave you a little hint with the roaring stock market. The 1920s. And here we are 100 years later. Now, the flu pandemic actually happened a little before the 20s. It's the 1920s. It's 1918. So I cheated a little bit. But come on. I can massage the facts a little bit to make a point, can't I? So a flu pandemic, a roaring stock market, and a national feeling of unparalleled greatness. The Roaring Twenties. So roaring, in fact, that these are some of the quotes from the time. Quote, "We will not have any more crashes in our time." John Maynard Keynes in 1927, 2 years before the stock market, which led to the crash, which led to the Great Depression. How about this one? "Stock prices have reached what looks like a permanently high plateau. I do not feel that there will be soon, if ever, a 50 or 60 point break from present levels, such as they have predicted. I expect to see the stock market a good deal higher within a few months." That was said by Dr. Irving Fisher, professor of economics at Yale University, on October 17, 1929, just a few weeks before the Great Crash. How about, there's another one. E.A.H. Simmons, president of the New York Stock Exchange at the time, said this, "I cannot help but raise a dissenting voice to statements that we are living in a fool's paradise and that prosperity in this country must necessarily diminish and recede in the near future." So some people were saying, like, as they should, some cautionary tales about wild expansionist stock market prices and so on. And Mr. Simmons says, "Ah, bah humbug on that. I don't think we'll ever have a bad stock market again." And then finally, Myron Forbes, president of the Peace Arrow Motor Company, said, "There will be no interruption of our permanent prosperity." Permanent prosperity. Even the idea sounds a little ridiculous to me, but I mean, not because I'm wishing bad things upon people, because I just know how life is. It just doesn't work that way. It's not ever great, always great, always wonderful. There's no permanent prosperity. By the way, Mr. Forbes probably found out about that not-so-permanent prosperity when his Peace Arrow Motor Company went bankrupt just a year later, I think. So, you know, we don't see any Peace Arrow Motor Company cars floating around, do we? Well, anyway, all those statements are to say this decade in money history, much like another decade in money history, we need to always be cautious. Now, you might be saying, "Dave, are you calling for a stock market bubble burst and a bear market and a crash?" No, I'm not, actually. I'm not. What I'm saying is that it would be stupid, very stupid, to throw caution to the wind and never expect such a thing to happen. And I will also add, don't, for goodness sakes, don't just listen to the pundits, especially national ones like a John Maynard Keynes. Think of your Fed chair, let's say now, somebody like that, or a giant corporate executive speaking out because they're so in bed with the government. Don't trust people who maybe have, what would you say, some other motives to claim that everything is all wonderful and hunky-dory, okay? Listen to people who maybe are in the business, like me. Listen to people who, and I'm not saying I'm always right either, because I'm not. I'm just saying listen to people who are literally trying to judge that which is on the ground and what they know about economics and money and so on. Like a Franklin Sanders, let's say. Like S.C. Iceman, let's say. Anybody who's out there actually working for people. and just ask them their advice on whether or not this thing's going to keep on flying high, permanent prosperity never go down, or whether they say, no, you need to have a little caution on both sides of this equation, bull and bear. That is my financial weather report and also my comparison of a couple of decades in money history. (844) 527-8723 is how you call in. I have a financial question of the day on the table. It's a pretty good one, I think. Do you know why? Do you know the real reason that the money industry is so regulated? Why is the money industry so regulated? I mean, I think we have about 14,000 bureaus that have some involvement with the money industry, whether it be the banking committees or, in, you know, the SEC. And, oh, we have FINRA, of course, that's a supposedly private. But whatever, all these things, you know, state regulatory agencies, insurance commissioners, the whole thing. Why is it so darn regulated? Well, if you have an answer to that question, you can call me or you can email me, truemoneyshow@crusadechannel.com or david@tffco.com. And you can join the chat room where everybody else is sitting there chatting and having some fun. Jeff H., I guess, is answering my question, prevent competition. Jeff, you might be wise beyond your years, dear fellow. Yeah, might be. I'm going to answer the question myself at the end of the show. Might take some of your answers and add to it myself. So, you want to know a little bit about the Crusade, huh? What we're doing? I'm just going to tell you about one thing, the Crusader Investment Club. Before I do, if you want the Crusade channel to survive, to continue to put out information about the Crusader Investment Club, to continue our fight against all the evil powers that be, and my goodness, there are aplenty. Well, then I highly recommend that you, I'll give you a simple idea. Right now, I am wearing my black polo Crusade Channel shirt. It's a great advertisement. It's a great shirt. You know where I found it? I found it laying in the street somewhere. Someone had taken one off and thought, no, I found it at the Founders Trading Post. That's where I found it, where you can find all the goods and services provided by this wonderful radio station. Whether you want your coffee, whether you want cigars, whether you want books, you need audio tapes, you need docudramas, you need shirts like the Crusade Channel shirt. Whatever you need is in the Founders Trading Post. And I don't know what else to tell you besides if every dollar you spend there gets, it's a dollar put into the fight against the evil powers that be. Do I need to say any more than that? I don't think so, Dave. Thank you. You're welcome. You really are. You're welcome that I'm sending you there to support a small business. So the Crusader Investment Club update. You know, first thing I want to say about this is this. I'm not a financial dictator in my business, and I'm not a financial dictator in the Crusader Investment Club. I do plan on being kind of the chairman of the board of the investment club only because, I pitched the idea and I put myself in the main seat. Not that I'll stay there forever, by the way, but anyway, that's where I am. I've already asked two people to join me on the advisory board, and they both accepted. So SC Iceman, Boo Boo, he's coming in strong with leading up the Shark Tank. Okay, we're going to give you more details on this in future emails and also future shows. And then the chicken lady, quack, quack, that's not a chicken. Is that a chicken or a duck, Simpson? Come on, man. Where's your quack, 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 quack? The chicken lady has come in. I don't know why, but I have this gut feeling that she would be perfect in the job I envisioned. Box number two of the investment club, which is she's going to manage the 10% of the allocation of the fund that's going to help anybody who wants, any club member who wants to borrow money, maybe get rid of a little nagging debt, maybe pay for a repair for their home, maybe, I don't know, whatever reason they might need a small little slice of money borrowed at very, very low, non-usurious rates. I wouldn't even call them rates, really. They're flat fees because we do need to make our cash productive in some way, shape, or form, or else what's the point of the investment club, right? But anyway, the chicken lady has jumped in, and she is going to manage that part of the business for me and also sit on the board. So there's your triumvirate right there. Been established, Dave Simpson of the True Money Show, SC Iceman, and Crusader Knights jumping in. Okay, very nice. And the Chicken Lady are your triumvirate of leaders. Now, there are going to be two more people involved because the Shark Tank is going to consist of three people. The Shark Tank is that third box we're building, the largest percentage of our allocation. 60% of the money is going to be allocated to them to find people who have a current business that they want to expand, or a new business that they want to start, or a new idea or product, service, whatever, that they want to create, and Our Shark Tank's going to evaluate them, whoever pitches us for money, and say, okay, we'll give you X dollars for either a percentage of the company, like partnership, or we'll loan them money, and then it won't be non-usurious rates, because if you're starting a capital enterprise, that's the one place. Well, they won't be usurious, but it'll be normal interest rates if we decide to loan money, because you are allowed to charge interest on a capital type of affair, something that doesn't evaporate in value. It's hard to describe this, but think of rent on a house. A house doesn't go away. So the late Scholastic said you could actually charge rent. Well, similarly, if you got a business that presumably won't go away, then the profitability can be hit for fees, and that's what we would call interest, right? So so S.C. Iceman's heading up the Shark Tank. He's going to get two people to serve with him, and then those two people will be on the board as well. There'll be a five-person board whenever you have to decide major items or whatever else. And then S.C. Iceman's also going to put together a panel of kind of what we call our panel experts. Just anybody who wants to be kind of voluntarily involved on the sidelines of the Shark Tank. Maybe you have an expertise like engineering or architecture or computer programming and the like, whatever. And we call on you if somebody's pitching us a Shark Tank idea and you have more expertise than, let's say, our three people sitting on the Shark Tank. So they might invite you in as a panel member to review the idea. So anyway, all this stuff is happening. The big number, though, you're probably asking me is, well, Dave, has the Crusader Investment Club started yet, man? No, it hasn't just started yet. I told you I wanted to get 100 people contributing $5,000 to start the club. Well, to actually build the seed, that's going to be the seed money for the club. Well, we've got 47 contributors right now. It's going up every day. And once we get to 50, I'm going to launch. Like I said, I want 100. That's be my goal. But once we get to 50, I'm going to launch. And then I talked to the chicken lady the other day, and she says, you know, Dave, if it's husband and wife can join, maybe your 47 people can turn into 94 people just by opening it up to buying two shares at a time instead of one. And I said, you know what, chicken lady? Brilliant! That's why you have people that are on your council with you, because they give you good ideas. And so anyway, what we might do if we get stuck at 53 or 57 or whatever number it is, we might say, hey, everybody can buy two shares, one for you and one for your wife. That will jump our numbers up, I'm sure, pretty radically. And then if we're still lagging a few from the 100, that perfect 500,000 I was trying to raise, well, then maybe we'll go out to some bigger, deeper pockets and say, hey, you want to buy three shares, five shares, or whatever, to finish it off. But we're going to get there. I am certain we're going to get there. Some other things happening in the Crusader Investment Club that I think you'll be interested in. You're listening to The True Money Show. I'm David Simpson here on the Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing. Can you tell I'm a little excited? I am a little excited. I mean, what do you say? I'm so pleased to have made the acquaintance of so many good people. I'm so happy to know that there are people who care out there. I'm just dumbfounded. I mean, I'm dumbstruck, really, that people aren't just talking. We have 47 people who've laid down $5,000 to say, yes, David, this is necessary. You don't think something big's about to go down? I'm just telling you, something big is about to go down. 47 contributors. We're going to get to the 100 for sure. While I've been working through this, so a CPA, I'm not going to say his name, his initials, SG, a CPA has offered to do pro bono bookkeeping and accounting for the club. Thank you very much. And then I talked to Franklin Sanders, who you know is a gold and silver specialist. He's really just brilliant in so many different fields. But so he gave me some ideas on where, because we're planning on actually buying some gold and silver too and doing the swapping program inside the club. So he gave me some ideas on how to store it and where to store it, if we're going to store it off-site or what we should do with it if we're going to take physical possession. I know people are going to be concerned about physical possession, so that's not going to be something that I decide. I'm going to have this as a regular function of the club. There will be times when we literally say, let's have a conference. We'll come. I'll come here to the studio. Mike knows how to set up a chat room and a limited audio entryway where everybody can get involved with me, and we can have a nice maybe 30 minutes to an hour talk about issues that I want the whole group to sound off on. And one of them will be this. We're going to buy some gold and silver. It'd be a lot smarter it'd be a lot cheaper, I should say, and I'm all about the cheap. It'd be a lot cheaper to take physical possession of the gold and silver, but that means I either got it or I've stuck it in a bank, and then I got to pay the safety box fees. So it would probably be a little bit cheaper, but no, probably a lot cheaper to take physical possession and keep it in my safe or something. But people might go, Dave, I really don't want you holding on to $200,000. Is that what the number's going to be? No, $100,000. I don't want you holding on to $100,000 worth of gold and silver. I like it, everything, but I don't like you that much. And I get it. Hey, we all got to be cautionary, right? So our second choice might be to store it, but storage has storage fees and the like. So those kind of ideas I'm going to bring to the group at large, and we're going to just chew the fat on it. And then if we can get some consensus, great. If we can't, then we'll let the triumvirate or the five-person panel make a decision on it. Anyway, that's something else going on. My point really was is that we have some great people getting involved, really strong minds, high character. I'm excited because where on earth can you have this level of not just commitment, but love and devotion and respect and interaction? And we're doing this, by the way, through the power. Some of the modern powers that we sometimes bemoan, all the internet and all these massive ways of communicating and the like, all built by my church through the Crusade Channel to serve us in a good Christian ethical way versus the immoral and evil way that all the evil forces use all of these things like the internet and all the communication services and the tracking devices and everything else. We have made our little beachhead. We got our little toehold. We're now in and growing. We're like a termite eating up the evil edifice that's been built up, and we're going to chew it apart. And I'm very, very excited. But we will have group council, meaning we will, on occasion, meet as a full investment club to discuss things, whether we do that telephonically or in person. And I'm just really excited because we have great council. We have people volunteering. I believe we have an excellent leadership board now. The Shark Tank is being developed. I will just say this. I'll finish this segment with this idea. I sent Franklin an email, asked him some questions about the gold and silver idea and about where we should store it, if we should store it, and where, and so on. And he wrote back, woohoo! I mean, I'm quoting here, woohoo! I'm so glad you are doing this, and he quoted me back to myself, forming businesses and creating a parallel economy to fight the corporate fascists that currently ruin us or currently running us and ruining us. He says, I've been urging people to do this forever, and I never, you know, they never get off of square one. And I wrote back, I said, well, you know, in my experience, you can urge and urge and urge and urge and urge and urge. And generally speaking, most people still won't move because they need a leader and they lack the confidence and they feel overwhelmed and for all a whole bunch of reasons. And I said, you know what, if we've got to just take the bull by the horns and do it, let's do it. And whatever comes. I mentioned in my speech that we might lose some limbs. We might lose some soldiers. We might lose all kind of things in this fight because the other side ain't going to like us too much. That's putting it very mildly. But you know what? I say, bring it on. It's time. I'm tired of running and cowering and moaning and whining about all this stuff. I want my patria back. I think that was the whole point of the Congress, wasn't it? 844-527-8723. You can call in. I am David Simpson here on the Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing, the True Money Show. Got a lot happening in the chat room. There are 4 dozen chatters in there. I'm checking my email. Let me refresh this page just in case I got another response. And so the question of the day is this. Do you know the real reason that the money industry is so regulated? I think the real reason might surprise you. Maybe it won't. Some of you have guessed some pretty good answers already. I'm going to give you an answer from Michael, who wrote me via email before the show, and it was quite a good answer. So I'm going to use his and build off of an answer myself at the end of the show. I've also got coming up my big announcement, another big announcement following the Congress, and I think this one is very necessary and kind of feeds off some ideas I was just talking about. I think you'll be glad to hear it. I'm actually going to look for somebody else to lead it up. I don't want to put myself in the middle of everything. I personally would like to be left alone pretty much all the time. Mike pulled me out of my hole some years ago. Actually, I kind of did it to myself because I stupidly ran for office because I was so sick of everything. And then Mike found me and he made me stay out of my... I came out of my hole. I thought I was going to be able to go back in to the hole. And Mike says, oh, no. You got to come out and stay out of the hole. Come here, Simpson. Come here. Slaps me around a little bit. Makes me stay out of the hole. I'm like, all right, I'll stay out of the hole with you, church. You jerk. A lot of times he tells me, hashtag life ruined, because I gave him a few things, I ruined his life. You know, he ruined my life, too. I was fine over there, man. Mulberry Street, sitting deep in the grass. Nothing didn't bother me. I'd go out to my little fire pit and burn some boxes, man. I had it all, baby. I wasn't doing anything. So it was fine. I had my kids. I had my wife. I was making a decent living. Not that great, but okay living. And I liked it. But he said, no, you got to stay involved. Thanks a lot, Mike. Hashtag ruin my side, bro. Brista, sister, Bristette. Speaking of Bristettes, how confused are we anyway? I've got a lot more coming up on the show, too. I just did my update on the Crusader Investment Club. There will be more emails coming very soon. Keep the emails, please, because that's going to be kind of the working bylaws of the organization. We'll flesh them out some more. But let me add just one more thing to that idea. I didn't say this, and I should. I'm going to say it as often as I can. I'm looking to create an atmosphere of friendliness, a familial atmosphere, a forgiving atmosphere. Like, you know, I'm going to make mistakes, guys. So is the chicken lady. So is SC Iceman. So is anybody. So you're going to make a mistake. Okay? You might tell me something wrong one night. I'm going to believe it. I go off and all of a sudden I wreck something because you gave me bad advice. And I want us to keep the attitude that, well, we're just trying to do something good. We love one another to the degree that we know we can love. I don't want to get too, you know, sappy here. I recognize we live far apart. I recognize we don't know each other as well as we should. I recognize that we don't have as much interaction as we might want. But we do care about one another because we have these deep concerns about our country and our states and our communities. We're working to fix it. So I just want you to have patience and have kindness and maybe read the passage about charity. Charity is gentle. Charity is kind, you know. Read that over and over again, and before you come to a meeting or before you interact with any of us, have that in mind and say, you know what? I don't think Mike really was trying to jack me around today when he made a joke. He was probably just joking. Yeah, he was joking. We were teasing our brothers and our sisters and our Bristas and our Bristettes. I really do want to try to keep that atmosphere and that attitude front and center. But if we do something wrong that needs reconciliation or repair, I will tell you this. I will do my best to fix it. I'll give you an example. No, I'm not. It'll sound like I'm bragging on myself. I'll just say this. I will fix what I break, okay? If I can't fix it completely, I'll fix as much as I can because I believe in making recompense if I do something wrong. I hope you do too. 844-527-87. The guru is back in. You know why the guru is in the chat room? I didn't tell everybody who I was today. I am the financial guru to the stars. One of my many monikers. And by the way, you spell that goo, G-O-O, roo, R-O-O. I'm kind of sticky that way. Let's start this story. I might have time to finish it, but I doubt it. And then we'll take a break and I'll come back and finish it if I don't get through it all together right now. But here, I'm calling this segment, you know, there's just no real reason to consider someone evil for being private. So this is a headline The author is Theron Mohammed, writing for, I think it was Business Insider. I didn't write that down, but I believe it's Business Insider on March 24th, so it's a little old. But here's the story. Here's the title, I mean. Just listen to the title. That's enough, really. The Mormon Church's secretive $100 billion fund. A secretive $100 billion fund. Give me a billion, and I could be and secret, and boy, what I could do with that. The Mormon Church's secretive $100 billion fund slashed big tech stocks, quadrupled its Tesla stake, and bought GameStop shares last quarter. So the reason I think this is significant is I'm going to add a little bit to my thoughts at the conference, at the Congress. So early in my speech, I was talking about authority and obedience, counter-revolution, and just the idea that some people think that we, and when I say we, I mean me, Mike, kind of anybody on the side opposing this current evil, that somehow or another we are breaking the rules of obedience and authority. Okay? And I was making mention of that, and I don't think I finished that thought completely. I did say always obey. I was trying to explain the point of obeying the higher authority. And so if you have an intermediate authority, let's say a governor, a president, doesn't matter who, a dog catcher, anybody over you in civil authority, if you have somebody over you in civil authority and he is violating morality, then you're not being revolutionary when you cite God or morality to tell him to stop being immoral. That was kind of my mainline point. I also made some references to how it's not evil to disobey regulations that aren't pure law. Okay, law, and all good law is based on morality, law is going to have a moral basis. When you say a law, what I mean by law is something that is absolutely unequivocally right and or wrong. If you're on the wrong side of it, if you do it, you've done a wrong both civilly and morally. Example, murder. You can't murder someone ever and say it's right. Okay? But regulations do not fit that same description. And so what I was trying to make the point was there are massive amount of regulations that we all obey like their laws. In other words, we give them the same level of allegiance and we ought not to. Why? Because they aren't meant to do that. And I gave the example of my son at a stoplight, at 2 o'clock in the morning or something, looking both ways. There's nobody on the road but him, and he drives on. And some people actually say, "You're breaking the law, Simpson. You shouldn't tell your son to do." I didn't tell my son to do it. He did it and told me, and I went, "Yes, that's fine, of course," because it's a stoplight. It's a traffic regulation. It's not morally right or wrong to drive through the light. It would be wrong if you were being reckless. It would be wrong if it was in the middle of the day in bumper-to-bumper traffic. That's why the regulator's there. But in the middle of the night when no one's there, especially in a small town like ours, it's absurd to think you got to wait the minute and a half for the light to change. That's not the purpose, and it's not wrong to drive through it. So I was trying to make that point. I am adding to the point that, yes, the Crusade Channel was what you might call a counter-revolutionary force, right? And some people get kind of itchy. Oh, I don't know. You all sound like you're terrorist or something. You're not doing good when you say, no, no, no. The revolution has already happened. When I say revolution, let me get firmly in your mind what I'm talking about. It was the overthrow of altar and throne, the overthrow of God in his total control of the universe, or the attempted overthrow. They'll never really do it, but they try. Overthrow of his representatives on earth, and overthrow of the civil authority, which is supposed to properly regulate our temporal affairs. And by the way, they should do very minimal in the way of regulation. They should do everything in the way of law, meaning they should put the moral law on the books and arrest people who are breaking it. But as far as limiting our actions in any other sphere, they should do it very, very, very minimally. But what I'm talking about is we're post that point. We're to the point where a revolution occurred. They tried to throw God out. They're trying to take over the civil authority, and they have. They're using the civil authority to supplant God, and they're telling you to listen to them like we ought to listen to God. meaning give them authority or allegiance and or obedience way beyond what they deserve. Now, that's counter-revolutionary. We have to say no to that, right? We have to say, no, I do not have to obey because you are immoral. You are acting like God and you're not. That's what I was trying to say. I don't know if I did it very well. What does that have to do with the Mormon church having a billion-dollar fund? The Mormon church has a secret $100 billion fund, and we're trying to start a $500,000 investment club. And some people are shaking their heads like, you can't do that. There's something, I don't know, it just rankles me, Dave. I've heard about regulations somewhere. I heard about bank laws somewhere. I heard about, financial investigations of things. And I'm thinking, I know, and that's an abuse of regulation. That's an abuse of law. That's an abuse of their authority, and we do not have to listen to it. And we ought not listen to it. We ought to give them the proverbial finger. And I know that scares people because I'll argue in your favor for a minute here, your good heart is telling you to obey rightful authority, but they're not rightful. Just get it out of your head that they really are doing this for your benefit, because they're not. And how could it possibly be wrong to have a $500,000 investment club for a bunch of friends getting together if the Mormon church has a billion-dollar fund and they do the same thing for their church? My views are it's time for us to get busy doing what we know is right and damn the rest, I guess.
If you got it, you don't need it. If you need it, you don't got it. You don't get it, shame on you. Funny, funny, funny what money can do. Them that have it get more of it, the less they need it.
Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity, then you'd better start to prepare by tuning into the True Money Show.
So the Mormons not only have a $100 billion secret fund, but they also have a pretty good tabernacle choir. Man, look at the orchestra in this thing, man. My goodness gracious. Maybe that's what they spend that $100 billion on. They buy musicians and I'll let that play in the background while I welcome you back to the True Money Show, Crusade Channel, last live radio station stand. This is the True Money Show. David Simpson here, your financial guru to the stars. I have all sorts of titles. You can call me fake Mr. Wonderful, the real Mr. Wonderful, whatever you want. I don't care. I also just go by Dave Simpson, that is. I run a small little outfit called the Fiscal Fitness Company, and I host the True Money Show they put it on every day. It's just once a week right now. I'm sorry. I can't do any better than that. All right. Anyway, so I was going to finish up. Before I get back to the show, though, don't forget to, if you're so inclined, to go into the chat room. You can click that little dollar sign. click that little dollar sign in the far right, right next to the little smiley face in where you type a message in. And that's how you can contribute to keeping the chat room alive. All you guys love to come in here. You talk to your friends. You catch up a little bit. You make some sassy remarks. You put some memes in there. You make fun of me and everybody else. It's all good. But, you know, if you want it to stay alive, throw some money in there and help Abrista out. Mike will be able to keep the chat room alive and keep the crusade alive because he's not funding it out of his retirement account anymore. And that's happened, by the way. That's happened because Mike gives beyond measure. By the way, just a real quick on the, I'll finish the Mormon Church's secret $100 billion fund. Just so you'll know what they invested in, it's kind of interesting, I thought. It says this, that they have I think they might have more than one manager. I got the impression, I don't know much about this fund, but there's a group called Ensign Peak Advisors, and I think it's one of their managers. They slashed their four biggest holdings in the most recent quarter, and I came up my own little acronym, because the four holdings they slashed were Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet, formerly known as Google. So that's two A's, an M, and a G if you're keeping score. It used to be a G anyway. So Instant Peak Advisors slashed MAGA. Everyone's attacking MAGA. Even the Mormon billion-dollar fund, their advisor slashed MAGA. That's Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and Apple. They really made some interesting moves. You wonder if this guy maybe is in touch with some powers that be. Because they took a bet on Tesla, of course. They more than doubled their holdings there. And surprise, 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 you're not going to believe this. Their value went up from 330 million, 550% to $330 million because they happened to correspond their doubling and tripling down of their position with the Tesla being added to the S&P. And I did a report on this, which is going to cause necessarily that everyone had to buy a Tesla to make it look like those index funds look like the S&P. You got to buy more Tesla, right? If it gets added to the S&P index. And so, lo and behold, Ensign Peak Advisors for the Mormon Church bought a bunch of Tesla as that happened, and their stake went up 550%, their stake value. What about this? They also bought GameStop at around $19 a share before it ratcheted up to $483, the highest mark during the reverse squeeze. And so anyway, their stake went from $900,000 in GameStop to $7 million where it currently is priced. So they made a seven bagger in about half a year. By the way, it only took them a year to make 550% in Tesla. So this guy is hitting some winners, man. Maybe I'll have to call Instant Peak Advisors. I just think I'm going to go out on a limb here and say they are connected. By the way, I misstated the Tesla stake. I wrote it down. I wrote it down the bottom of the page because I was amazed by it. Their Tesla stake went from $1 million to $330 million in 12 months. Now, some of that was purchases and some of that was just the growth of Tesla. But my point is that's a winner, okay? Maybe, just maybe, the Crusader Investment Club will get so lucky as we'll take that $500,000, Somebody do the math for me. With $500,000, let's see, well, oh, it'd be half of $330 million because that's how much we, yeah, we'd have $165 million if we get lucky as the Mormon Church's secretive $100 billion fund did. Wow. Maybe that. Hey, SCIce, when you're listening, I need you to tap into all the secret conferences that are happening where everybody's talking about where to make money. Because I want you to take my $500,000 and make it $165 million in a year. wouldn't that be nice? Cool. All right. Let's go on here. I got a few things to cover. What else am I covering on the show today? I don't even know what I've talked about. Yeah, I do. I do. I'm going to do this day in money history. There ought to be a law. Boy, there ought to be a law. Reviving local economies, we talk about it a lot. Let's just ask the question, why? And boy, do I have an answer for you. And then I'm going to answer my own financial question today at the end of the show. The real reason, why is the money industry so regulated? Had some good answers via email and the chat room, and I'm going to give you my own answer at the end of the True Money Show. Hey, look, I'm looking at a headline right now. AOC, by the way, I just got to say, don't you hate when somebody just gets created out of nothing? Bartender turned U.S. representative. Now her initials are known internationally. AOC. AOC moves to block a $735 million arms sale to Israel, saying the U.S. has a, that's where the headline ends. Well, thank you, AOC. I'm so glad you're there fighting. You know, actually, I might be in favor of that one. But you get the point. Like, AOC has the answer to everything. I doubt it. I certainly don't. This day in money history, there ought to be a law for that. Oh, wait, there is a law. No, wait, there's more than one law for that. Wait, there's all kinds of laws for that. Why aren't the laws working? That's my segment on this day in money history, May 19th, 1986. A little known fact, May 19th, 1996. Listen to what act was signed into law by Ronald Reagan on May the 19th, 1986. The Firearm Owners Protection Act, FOPA. I just made that up, but it is FOPA. Firearm Owners Protection Act is signed into law by President Ronald Reagan on May the 19th, 1986. Now, don't all of you firearm owners, don't you feel protected? I mean, it's such a joke. So we have the Second Amendment. We've got FOPA. We got our guns themselves where we can shoot somebody who tries to take them. And we still think we need law to protect us from what? I know. From a liberal agenda, a design to disarm us. They have been at it for ever since Hitler made it popular. They've been at it for so long, and they never stop. And so we keep passing laws, because the good guys, and here I'm putting the good guys kind of in air finger quotes, but the good guys think, oh, come on, if we pass a law, people will respect the law. I mean, come on, right? Well, two problems with that idea. One, they don't respect the law to begin with. If they did, the Constitution would actually be governing us, and we'd have a happier country. Nobody knows. Nobody believes we have that right now, right? The other thing is they're making laws that are outside their jurisdiction, so they're not good laws. Third thing is they're not laws at all because they're dealing with regulatory issues, and they have no right to regulate my right to self-defense. 0.0. And so we go round and round and round and round with the lawmaking machine, and I just feel like it's a noose. Not a nuisance, a noose. Like, can you say noose anymore? I don't know if you can say noose anymore. Can you say noose and not be considered a racist? You know, if you put a piece of string hanging from a NASCAR garage, you're going to go to jail now. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. Do you see what I'm getting at, though? If Ronald Reagan in 1986 could sign into law something called the Firearm Owners Protection Act, and you add that on top of the old Second Amendment, and you add that on top of just the general idea that every person has the right to self-defense and it shall not be abridged, not because the Second Amendment says so, because God says so, you'd think we'd be pretty much done with the idea, right? But no. So there ought to be a law for that. Oh, wait, there is one. Wait, there's more than one. Hey, law doesn't amount to a hill of beans. You know why? Because when you have a lawless criminal syndicate running your country, you're not going to get respect for law. That's my second rant of today. If I do one more rant, Mike Church is going to throw me out of the state. He's going to say, Simpson, listen, man, I can't have you going off like that all the time on the air. What are you doing? You're scaring the kids. Well, let's move to some birthdays. Maybe birthday celebrations will make everyone happier. I've got five birthdays. There's a couple of them that are going to combine into one thought. Here's the birthdays of today. May 19th, 1795. Johns Hopkins. I wonder why his name was Johns. Anyway, Johns, I guess he had a multiple personality or something. He was more than one John. 1795, Johns Hopkins, philanthropist. He founded, of course, Johns Hopkins University. So that's happy birthday to Mr. Johns Hopkins. I've got, apparently May 19th is a very popular day for communist dictators, their birthdays. In 1890, Ho Chi Minh, the Vietnamese communist revolutionary, was born. And in 1925, Pol Pot, not to be outdone, he's a good murder dictator. Pol Pot, the Cambodian dictator and revolutionary, and led the Khmer Rouge from 1963 to 1997. He was born on this day, May 19th, 1925. So whatever you think of this day from now on, just think of communist dictators and you'll be pretty close to the mark. And then finally, I've got these two that kind of married up in my mind. Peter Mayhew and Peter Townsend. So, I didn't recognize Peter Mayhew's name, and I was like, wow, okay, I didn't know that. So, today, May 19th, 1986, is Chewbacca's birthday. Peter Mayhew, 1944, he was born. British actor, he played Chewbacca in Star Wars. So, happy birthday, Chewbacca. And then Pete Townsend, of course, English rock guitarist man. Born in London, England on this day in 1945. So Aronia, whatever your name is, do a little rock and roll for Pete Townsend today. What you think about that, Brista? That was This Day in Money History brought to you by... You know, Mike could do that. Mike actually can, like, he can be finishing a sentence and he can turn it into like a little promo and a commercial. I guess all those times he had to do, what do you call them, remotes for radio stations. He probably got really good at saying, that was brought to you by Nabisco. Thank you very much. I don't have that ability. I don't have anybody say that was brought to you by. Well, okay, it's brought to you by the Fiscal Fitness Company, who is also the founder and instrumental player in the Crusader Investment Club. If you'd like to learn more about the Fiscal Fitness Company, you can go to fiscalfitnesscompany.com. And meet David Simpson and all the other great people over at Fiscal Fitness Company, which is nobody besides, because David is a single-person shop suffering in silence over there. That wasn't a very good commercial, was it? What do you want to talk about next? How about my question of the day? Do you know the real reason, and I mean the real reason, that the money industry is so regulated? Well, I'm going to tell you at the end of the show. But if you'd like to answer that question, you can call in 844-527-8723, 844-5-CRUSADE. You can email me, truemoneyshow@crusadechannel.com, or you can, of course, join the chat room by becoming a member. And, Molly sent me a little personal message. I'm sorry, I'm reading it right now on the air. Or you can join the chat room, becoming a member of the wonderful family of the Crusade Channel, and meet everyone else and see, you know, chat with me privately like Molly's doing right now. I'll give you that in a minute, Molly. Will you send me the message again so I won't forget? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll type it in right now because I'm so darn good. Boom. There you go. There you go. Perfect. All right. So this is going to be my second giant announcement in a week. It also is going to kind of correspond with my financial thought of the day. What is my financial thought of the day? One of the things we're trying to do with the Crusader Investment Club is create new businesses. I'm looking for people who want to create a business, one, who know how to run a business, two, can make it profitable and willing to share those profits with people who help you through, you know, create your business and buy your products and so on. People, you'll share those profits with your partners, in other words. But mostly, I'm trying to create production again at the local level. Some people might say, well, why? And that's a great question, really, because I think a philosopher always seeks the most fundamental answers to those fundamental questions. And so I got this thing from Franklin Sanders today. I asked Franklin some questions about gold and silver and where to store and all this other stuff. And he saw what we were doing, and he was so excited. He started sending me a series of articles he'd written over the years about the very topic that we're doing, which is trying to revive local economies. The first article I clicked on was called Reviving Local Economies. And this is what he said. And then when I finished reading what he said, this is only the first page, by the way, and I think Franklin in one page encapsulated much of my speech that I gave at the Congress. I mean, he's just a wordsmith and a great articulator of the ideas. After I finish this, though, at this introduction, or my financial thought of the day, I'm going to announce the second big announcement coming from the Congress, and something I think very critical and crucial. And I think it'll be something that should make you all feel better. So here's what Franklin has to say about reviving local economies. Lots of folks write about the need to revive local economies, but not many actually do it. To do it, you need to have some idea what you need to do. Not long ago, a friend of mine called. He had somehow landed on the Chamber of Commerce in a sparsely populated county near us. Like most rural counties in the U.S., his local economy had been sucked dry. It's dying. My friend said, quote, put your money where your mouth is. We're not talking generalities anymore. What can we do to revive our local economy? Close quote. Generalities anyway. So Franklin says, why revive local economies anyway? Isn't the national, now global, economy doing just fine? No. Here's a little story that explains, if you need an explanation, while watching the economic crisis du jour, raging inflation, environmental degradation, debt slavery, the exportation of American industry and agriculture with widespread bankruptcies and falling living standards. If you can see all that and you still need an explanation, Franklin says, here's the explanation. In 1917, Ford Motor Company introduced the Fordson tractor. At that time, America was made up of multitudes of self-sufficient farms feeding local economies. Money passed from hand to hand in the local economy, farmer to craftsman to merchant and back to the farmer. Motive power, mules and horses, were raised free on the farm. Fuel was grown at home, too. Very little money was spent off the farm, since most everything was raised there, and the self-sufficient farmer needed little money. The Fordson tractor, of course, could do more work than several teams of horses. It never tired, never needed to rest. Farmers bought tractors, and money, listen guys, left the local economy for Detroit. But the drain only began there. Fuel for tractors doesn't grow on farms, so more money for fuel drained away to New York. Also, mama and daughters wanted all the things they could buy in town now. To earn more money, farmers planted more, fence row to fence row. Sometimes they even pulled up the fence rows and planted them too. As long as World War I raged, commodities commanded high prices.
When the war ended, demand disappeared and commodity prices plunged. Farmers responded by increasing production. The bottom fell out of commodities, and farmers in the American economy have been trying to recover ever since. To drain even more money out of local economies, the last 40 years has seen the rise of chain stores and franchises like Walmart, Home Depot, McDonald's, and 100 more. These all act as giant vacuum cleaners, sucking money out of circulation in the local economy. So in the abstract, reviving the local economy depends on one thing alone, more money. Here's where the trouble starts, because it makes all the difference in the world whether the money comes from outside or inside the economy. Isn't that brilliant? He said in one page, in less than one page, what I tried to say when I was referencing the fact that everyone always says, Dave, why don't we start our own currency? Why don't we start our own currency? Why don't we start our own currency? And I said, you got to start production first, and because there's no reason to have a medium of exchange unless you have something to exchange. Hence the idea for the Crusader Investment Club. I want to recreate producers. And in recreating producers, we can then start trading. And once we start trading and that trading gets more voluminous, we will end up having a need for a currency, and I full well plan to start one. But I won't until we get production going. But listen to what Franklin adds. He says it's really, really important whether money comes from outside or inside the economy. He goes on to say this one last little paragraph. Around the country, the model followed by the chambers of commerce and government development agencies is bring money from the outside. That always boils down to two things. Bring in industry, meaning some other company coming in to suck more money out of your self-sufficient farm, or tourism, outside money. Guys, the objective we've embarked upon, the goal we've embarked upon, is to stop the money drain, right? But that's not sufficient just to say, okay, I won't buy from Walmart. It helps. I'll try to buy from the local hardware store, grocery store. So, okay, you can go down the list, right, that all Walmart represents. You could say, I'm going to stop buying from Amazon, but you'll be hard-pressed to find a whole lot of local stores that could supply you with everything Amazon produces or at least sells. You can stop streaming Netflix, but you're not. The theater in town, in my town, is closed. There is nowhere to watch a movie in town anymore. No, the dinner theater is still open, the movie tavern. That's good, I guess. But that's a national enterprise as well. There are no drive-ins that some guy started to entertain folks and bring community together and have a good time. Do you see? I mean, Main Street has been decimated. We talk about this all the time. And it's not as simple as stopping buying somewhere else, because you are going to buy irrespective. The question is anything being produced in your town? Now, you might say, David, your little Crusader Investment Club is going to somehow recreate production in every community across the United States. Answer? Well, I don't expect it to tomorrow. But full answer, yes, I darn well expect it to. Not that $500,000, but when that model is shown to be profitable and we do it again and again and again, and when those industries that we create, when those companies we create, those products and services that we create are generating revenue not just for the person that the business is created by, but also for the club itself, and the money starts to expand and we do more. And yes, I expect an exponential growth because people want this. They are sick of being involved in the anonymous, horrible service and products you get from Blobistan Commerce Company, right? How many times? I mean, I think it's the same. We've been abused. We hate being considered a number. We hate being prodded around like cattle in a worming line. We cannot stand the maltreatment we get from airlines and banks and insurance companies, and yet we continue to do business with them. because we have no choice. I'm going to create a choice. We're going to create a choice. You are creating a choice because you want it. And that means you have a mind that desires freedom and good for you. Now, when we say such things, here's my big announcement coming up, right? When we say such things, when I say such things, some people are going to say, well, Dave, I see part of your point, but not all your point. Dave, I heard you talk about capitalism at the Congress, and I thought you had some disparaging remarks, and by God, I'm a capitalist. Okay. Dave, you mentioned distributism, and I think that's just a code word for some kind of crypto-socialism. Okay. Dave, on and on and on and on. I'm not the Oracle, guys. I don't have all the answers. Neither does Franklin. Neither does Mike Church. Neither does some, I don't know, talking head in the sky. Neither does the encyclopedia, for God's sakes. We are in progress. We're in process. We are honing our skills, right? I've worked in the financial world for 21 years. I've read lots of books. I've done lots of activities. I've counseled many people. And I've learned a lot from that, but I don't know everything. And neither do you, neither does anyone but God. And so I welcome controversy. I welcome dispute. We need it. When people came to me after the Congress and said, you know, I heard you talking about capitalism, but I'm not sure if I quite got it. Like, you know, what do you mean? One guy was saying, oh, no, it's not capitalism. It's the aberrational capitalism. It's the evil capitalism. It's the monopolistic capitalism. It is. But I said it back to him, well, tell me where that theoretical capitalism that you have in your mind, where it's ever existed. I'd like to see that free market because I've never seen a free market. I've never seen one. I know we can talk about them. I've never seen it. It's like talking about a unicorn. Great. Love to meet one. I don't think I will. Right? To me, this capitalism that I used to believe in is a lie. It was to trick us into doing what those farmers did with the Fordson tractor. More. Why? I don't know. More. Hey, where's your money being spent? Oh, New York. Oh, Detroit. Oh, San Francisco. Everywhere but home. Does that make... Why would you do that? Let me ask you something. When he described that local economy, let me give it back to you. At that time, America was made up of multitudes of self-sufficient farmers feeding local economies. Money passed from hand to hand in the local economy, farmer to craftsman, to merchant, and back to farmer. Motive power, mules and horses were raised free on the farm. Fuel was grown at home, too. Very little money was spent off the farm since most everything was raised there, and the self-sufficient farmer needed little money. When he made that description, did your heart kind of sing a little bit like, man, I'd love to have that kind of control of my life again? Man, I'd love to have that kind of stability. Wow, what a world when we actually have general, I won't say absolute, but general temporal contentedness. Can you imagine the town that used to have its own one little restaurant and the hardware store and maybe a couple of shops? Most things you didn't need to buy there, but you did every once in a while for fun, for community, for just for goodness sake. You went to the ball game Friday night because it was a social event and not because you had to support the school because they still don't have enough money after all the government bailouts of them. Oh, my Lord. What is wrong with stability? Why can't we stay in it and be satisfied with it? What is wrong with a general temporal contentedness? Is there something wrong with it? Or are we just fools biting the apple of greed? Biting the stupidity of more is better. Bigger is better. You notice how their buying of the tractor was the beginning of the end, right? Two reasons. Money flowed out of their economy, and production was, well, it was, it's a weird thing. It was expanded, but contracted in profitability, right? You just can't produce enough when prices for your products are falling, right? More. Thought that was going to be better. It wasn't. But who cares? Let's just go ahead and keep pretending that capitalism is the answer. I know. You're going to say, well, Dave, again, that's that aberration. Okay, we're back to the old argument. That's kind of my big announcement. I want to create, because I admit I don't have all the answers. I will admit this, too, and I think this is true. We have yet to see in humankind, and I'm talking about all of history, an economic system that I would say is genuinely good for humankind and satisfies their longings, not making them want to run off and bite all the other apples, whether it be communism or pseudo-capitalism or whatever else. We have yet to see that. Yes, there was some forms of the distributive state, probably most closely aligned with the Guild Age and the Ages of Faith and the in Ages of Christendom. But I think that still lacked something. That's why I think it fell so rapidly. But I don't have all the answers. And I would just love to see economics more firmly addressed, more profitably put into place, and tested on the ground to see how well it works, all of our ideas, all of our theoretical ideas about what would be better. And so for all of the discussion that was raised due to me making my criticism of the cap trap, well, let's open the debate. My big announcement is we're going to create a group, a think tank, called the Societal Economic Reform Association. That's SERA.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be, will be.
Oh, the sweet and beautiful Doris Day. I didn't intentionally make my acronym SERA, SERA. But isn't it kind of nice to think that we're going to form a group? Let's listen to her again. Oh, yeah.
Whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be?
We need a think tank. We do. A good one. You know, we have the American Philosophical Association, the G.K. Chesterton Society. We have all these things. You know, people get together and they discuss grand issues. That's all. I think it's wonderful. I do. I really think it's great. And I didn't go check to see if there's one in economics, but I'm sure most of the economics out there is probably pretty pathetic, pretty paltry, pretty, I don't know. I'm just guessing because of how bad economics is explained today in almost every sphere that I look at. People walk around not knowing what inflation is. They don't have any idea what debt money is or what fiat currency is, what why there's even such a thing as a gold and silver standard, the history of monopolies, whether or not they naturally exist or don't. I mean, you can go on and on and on, as Mike would say. And, you know, the talk keeps going, but I never see the walk ever happening, nor do I ever see any advancement in economic policy. Like, oh, wow, we got rid of that terrible thing we call the perpetual corporation, just for one idea. So I'm going to create the Societal Economic Reform Association. Maybe our theme song will be Que sera, sera. Because whatever will be, will be. We're going to think it. We're going to debate it. And then, as an adjunct to the Crusade Investment Club, we're going to actually try to put some of those ideas into place. Now, I'm going to explain my name just a little bit. Societal Economic Reform Association. By the way, I'm looking for someone to lead this. I don't want to be the leader of it. I will be a participant. I would love to have after my name, member of the societal of the SERA, Societal Economic Reform Association. I'd love to put that on my masthead for the rest of my life, a talking head in the SERA. Right. I want someone else to lead it though. So if anybody wants to lead the SERA, Societal Economic Reform Association, please email me David@tffco.com or TrueMoneyShow@CrusadeChannel.com. Now listen, you're not to be an economic expert to lead this organization. You're just gonna set meetings, come up with times for us to all get on a conference call, create a topic, and we'll discuss the topic. Maybe announce the topic a week or two ahead of time so we can prep a little bit. Pretty simple. We'll have somebody being the recording secretary. We'll make notes and add that to our web page when we create a web page. And we will debate topics, write white papers. We'll just on and on. We're going to do some great thinking work and then put it into a laboratory through the Crusader Investment Club. What do you think about that? That way, no one has to feel like Dave Simpson is dominating them. I'm not going to run over you with my beliefs. I'm going to offer them into evidence. That's all I want to do. Notice, though, I made it societal, not the American Economic Reform Association. Why, Dave? Why'd you say societal instead of American or state or something like that? Because I want to do economic reform at whatever level we can actually find socius, whatever level we can find society. If the only place we can find allies, friends, that's what socius means, that's what society means. If that can only be in a 10 square mile area, then that's where the reform should take place. We always have grand imaginings that every plan has to be nationwide, and I mean thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, north, south, east, and west. And as Mike says all the time on his show, it just doesn't work. Small is beautiful. But I don't know what level that is. So I put societal. So whatever level we can still find society is where we want the economic reform to take place. Notice I put economic reform. This name is very intentional. You may not like it because it doesn't flow off the tongue that well. Societal Economic Reform Association doesn't really flow off the tongue that well, but it's very intentional. Economic reform, we're not trying to do revolution, right? I saw the poll I'd put somewhere in the chat room. We're not revolutionaries. We're trying to restore order. That's counter-revolutionary. By the way, I meant to answer a question. Oh, gosh, I'll get back to that in a minute. I forgot who even asked it now. Well, I'll just answer the question. Societal. We wanted to find the level of society where we can still be friends, and that's where these activities, these test markets ought to be tried. Economic reform, we're trying to reform, not revolt. And then association. We are associates. There will be different views, guys. There will be times when we debate and have serious arguments, serious confrontation about it. We're going to have forums and, like I said, write white papers because we might take opposite views. And it's through that process of us testing each other's intellect and our wills and our skills and our abilities and so on. That's where we're going to actually find the truth. Because when we go back and put it on the ground and it works, it's kind of hard to argue with success. So let's just say somebody says, I don't know. There should be no corporation. No, I know, no insurance. Insurance should be banned, right? That's an economic idea. Let's say our little group tries it somewhere. They really abandon insurance altogether in every regard. And then they find it doesn't work. Let's say there's a catastrophe and they really wish they'd pooled some money together to help that person in the catastrophic event. They'll come back to the SERA and say, you know, that idea we had, yeah, that didn't go over too well. We kind of do like some financial backing in some circumstances that we might call insurance. Okay, good. We're glad we learned that lesson, right? Maybe we can debate that and come up with it just in debate. We won't have to try it. That's a kind of a weird example to try, but you get my idea. We're going to hone a sound economy, a humane economy. We're going to hone that into a very visible idea, and we're going to try to implement it. Why? Because I believe, as I said earlier, that the church has kind of let us down here a little bit because, well, they're not supposed to really expound on economics too much. They've done some expounding on it, but they can only go so far. They don't actually try to put, you know, practices like ideas into place. They just give you what ethics would do in economics, right? I want to put it into practice. Take the ethical, the ideal, the theoretical, and I want to put it into practice. And I don't think we can do that with just one mind. Hence, the Societal Economic Reform Association. If you want to join it, email me. If you'd like to lead it, I love you. Write me, David, D-A-V-I-D, at tffco.com. In my church, you can add that down to the Crusader Night Actions. There is now a think tank formally designed to discuss economic ideas and applications and real-world improvement of our current situation. By the way, if you're interested in Franklin's article, Reviving Local Economies, just send me an email and I'll send you this too. Boy, the first page just blew me away. And I didn't even read anymore. And I can't wait to get back home and study this as I continue to study what I'm trying to propose to you, which is let's create a parallel economy and get out of this nasty one that we're in. 844-527-8723 is how you call in. There was a question in the chat room. Someone was asking, could you get into the Crusader Investment Club at a lower buy-in, like $1,000, and add money over time? I haven't really decided that yet. And now that we have the board in place, maybe I'll ask the board. My idea was this, because someone else asked a similar question to me in an email. My first answer was no. I'm really trying to get the buy-ins because I want to get the revenue up, the fund, the seed fund up to the level as quick as possible. Let's just say that will be a possible alternative. We might go that route, $1,000 in and buy in $100 a month, whatever, till you meet the goal. But I think what I might do instead, because there's actually people who've already offered this, I might go to someone else. Maybe we're going to do these private relationships, private agreements. Someone else will front you. Let's say you got $1,000. Someone will front you $4,000, and you'll pay them back over time. Because I've had people offer to buy more than one share for people. And so I'm thinking maybe we'll do it that way. Then the fund gets all the money it needs to start, and you can make your private arrangement with paying someone else back. And maybe you'll have a friendship and create a relationship. And all of a sudden you go, wow, I got a new buddy somewhere. All through the Crusader Investment Club. So there's two potentialities here, two ways out. We might do a monthly contribution. I'll ask the board what they think about that. And then if not, I believe we're going to find people who will front you the money themselves with a payback plan. How's that sound? Perfect. 844-527-8723. I got, 5-6 minutes left, I guess. That might be enough time to get to my financial question of the day. Let me check the... somebody was commenting on Doris Day's voice. She did have a great voice. And I thought she was really another one of those like America's sweetheart kind of people. You know, you just kind of like to look at her. She's sweet. She's precious looking, adorable, very wholesome looking, wonderful voice. And you go, man, you know, where did all these ladies go? Now, whether she was really good and pure in her real life, I have no idea. I don't really, I haven't studied Doris Day that much. But anyway, I'm going to go home. That movie, that was from the movie The Man Who Knew Too Much, one of those Hitchcock movies. Lately, I've been watching old episodes of the Alfred Hitchcock Show, and I've been enjoying them. They're weird. They're kind of different. They're weird, and Hitchcock is bizarre. You know how weird that dude was. But it's been really a lot of fun. And so I'm going to start watching a little more Hitchcock just because, you know, he did make some good stuff. All right. Let's go. What's happening in the chat room? I'm checking you guys out. What are y'all talking about in there? You're making fun of somebody again. Don't do that. Let me refresh this too. All right. So my financial question today is this, and I did get an answer, so I'll read the answer first. But my financial question today is why do you know the real reason that the money industry is so regulated? Here's what Michael had to say. Boy, this is a good answer. In theory, it is to prevent fraud from being perpetrated on consumers and to protect their investments. And you know what, Michael, that'd be, in theory, that probably is their theory. And it'd be really a great theory if it ever happened, right? Like, how many times have we ever seen them catch a fraudster before he defrauded everyone? And the answer is 0.0. But you hear thousands and thousands and thousands of times of, well, they ran off with all the retirees' money and they're all suffering. And we caught the guy, but of course the money's gone because he bought Lamborghinis with it. That's usually what you hear. There's a whole television series called American Greed. It almost makes you believe you should never put your money with one of these clowns, me being one of them, because they all run off with people's money. We know that's not true. But anyway, yes, that's the theory. What a joke of a theory it is. Anyway, in practical reality, Michael continues, I would guess that the real reason is to consolidate wealth and power within the financial sector and limit it to those banks, financial institutions, and financial markets that have the government's favor via the central banking system. But that's just a guess. Well, that's one heck of a guess, Mr. Michael, because here's my answer, and I think you'll find it corresponds pretty well. So I think of it this way. If you conceive of money as monetization, or money and monetization as the reins. Okay, imagine a horse. A horse has a bit in his mouth and reins attached to him, right? Money and monetization is the bit and the reins that they put in our mouth, okay? And we've been controlled by it ever since. Ever since they monetized everything, go back to Franklin's article, when they got the guy to buy off on buying the tractor, well, he was in debt to them now. He's been monetized. Once they got that control, then it becomes obvious what the horse traders want. They would never, ever, ever want someone taking charge of those reins. In other words, they just put an ankle bracelet around you with a big chain, ball and chain on it. They're not giving anybody that key. It just don't work that way. We invested too much money in stealing your life from you, buddy. Sorry. Now, you think, well, how to do this? Well, make it sound like anyone. In other words, how do you do this? How do you make financial regulations sound plausible? Well, make it sound like anyone or anybody, anything tampering with the quote-unquote system is up to no good and is a dishonest thief. Now, so Michael, yes, they sit there and say, oh, fraud, secrecy, stock manipulation, inside trading, evil, evil bastards, right? That's the whole name of the game. They're not going to tell you about the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of honest people dealing with money every day. They don't rip people off. So it's not whether you hold money or don't hold money. It's not money is going to make you a thief or not. It's that they've put reins in their mouth and they're just not going to let anyone else take charge of those reins. Notice this is a major case of the pot calling the kettle black, right? They're the fraudsters. They're the ones who are ripping us off when they inflate our money away. They're the ones who steal our money and use it for undeclared wars and all kind of other things without our consent. But that's legal and good. But if someone wants to just try to do like I'm doing, a Crusader Investment Club, yes, we'll probably be at one point analyzed whether or not we're violating the principles of good government of money. Mm-hmm. So here's the real reason we're so regulated is that we're entrapped by money and the slave masters don't want us getting free. But I got news for them. We will get free. You guys have been listening to The True Money Show on the Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing. Keep the faith and keep the fight, bristers.
That old